Wake up, sleepyheads. This is CJSF 90.1 FM.
And you're tuning in to Slumber Party.
Welcome. This is CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, community radio from Simon Fraser University. We broadcast on the stolen ancestral territory of the Kwikwetlem, Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh.
Listen online at cjsf.ca or on our radio app, which you can download from the app or Google Store, depending on your device. Keep up to date on our social media at linktree / CJSF Radio and learn more by visiting our website, cjsf.ca.
We're both tripping over our words here.
This little section is an impossible one for me to get through. Got a request? Text or call us at 778-782-CJSF-2573.
You sped that up.
Yeah.
You sped that up.
Showing off a little.
Anyways, hi everyone, or hi you, the listener. Here we are, another Tuesday for Slumber Party. So every 6-7 on Tuesdays. So glad you could join us this week. Very, very hot day today, I think, personally.
And we have a hot topic coming up later, too.
Very hot topic. Very exciting topic that we're looking forward to sharing, sharing some thoughts on this. But as usual, we'll start off with some music before we do that.
And also, we didn't introduce ourselves today, but I'm DJ Star.
Do we not even? I'm getting too used to this. I'm DJ Coco.
You know us already. It's fine.
Yeah, you should know us by now. Is there anything else?
No, sorry. I just wanted to say that. The first song that we are going to play is called Late Summer, and it's by the artists Ciel and Matisse Ruffing. She's a Toronto-based Chinese DJ who blends house and techno from her EP Hot Squid.
So, hope you enjoy.
Enjoy.
Thank you. 6, CGSS Video Series captures high-quality video recordings of live performances.
So, who are you?
That's a dumb question. We're necking.
And interviews with impactful and inspiring artists.
We weren't very good at keeping it a secret.
As well as engaging conversations with community members about the issues that are most important to their communities. Watch all of the Studio 6 live sessions on CJSF's YouTube page or on our website at cjsf.ca/studio6.
FM Burnaby Community Radio from Simon Fraser University. You're tuning into Slumber Party. I'm DJ Star.
And I'm DJ Coco.
And that last song that you just heard was Hey Now by Koreatown Acid. She is, oh my gosh, my chair is so squeaky. She is a South Korean-Canadian electronic DJ based in Toronto. And if you missed it, that last song right before that was Late Summer by Ciel and Matisse Ruffing. So yeah, I think we're ready to launch into our big topic for the day.
Mega topic. So this one is both of us inspired I guess. Mm-hmm. But kind of goes off of the, I don't know, it's like social trend of going to Japan.
And being obsessed and, with Japanese culture, which fuels the travels to Japan.
Yeah. So that's the basis of the conversation. But specifically, we are going to go more into the stereotypes and more the history of how Japanese women and Asian women are perceived overall by men.
Especially white men.
Especially white men. So kind of this whole sphere of, you know, there's a lot of white guys specifically who are very, very, very interested in Japanese culture. As
I love the tone of voice.
Very, to a point that I don't think is seen on any level of any other culture. Not any other Asian culture, not, you know, maybe Latino culture, for example.
At least currently and at least right now, it feels like a very current trend of being obsessed with Japan specifically. And yeah, I agree with DJ Coco that there does not seem to be any other parallels. I know in the past there have been, you know, the romanticization of different European countries, but this is a little bit different and also has some history backing why people might be more obsessed with Asian women, Japanese women, are also just foreign in general cultures, or quote-unquote foreign.
Mm-hmm, definitely. We're just going to start off slow. So just the fact that everyone is traveling, and traveling is more accessible in today's age than ever. Plane tickets can be bundled with hotel deals, for example. It's gone down in price, so more of the average person can go travel. And specifically Japan, maybe you've heard of a friend or a family member, someone who's going to Japan at this point, because number one, that it's so cheap, or it's a lot cheaper to get a plane ticket over there and just quickly direct go over there, Canadian dollar strong.
Mm-hmm. And we're not trying to say that there's no reason to go to Japan either, other than an obsession, because there is great food, you know, the nature is really nice. But for the trend to be growing so largely, there has to be some other factors at play. And we want to, you know, dissect that a little bit more.
Yes, because there's also a lot of people in the West, specifically also Western guys, white guys, who are very entrenched into Japanese culture. So we're talking, you know, anime, biggest one, because nowadays anime and liking anime is quote, it's considered cool, versus, you know, 10-15 years ago when you'd be seen in a negative light. And other things like, you know, Pokemon's massive now, the Japanese food like ramen, and even just fantasizing about how respectful and polite their culture is. Of people waiting their turn at subways, for example.
Yeah, and there's also this, I guess, idea that Japan is, you know, living in the future. They're so futuristic. They're so propelled into further development than us. And I feel like that is also a point of intrigue for many people. But I think a question also could be, like, what is the difference between appreciation for a culture, because there are obviously like lots of great things about Japanese culture, but also the line between appreciation or fetishization, because there's so much about other cultures in general that's more accessible. We can consume a lot of Japanese media on the internet, streaming, we can learn the language on Duolingo, lots of universities are offering these courses too. And yeah, like the fetishization aspect, like the definition of that. And specifically when we're talking about, I guess, Asian women, is that it's a form of objectification that operates through like reducing an aspect of someone's identity to just that, and not seeing them as an individual and only seeing their value in a sexual light or in a light that, I guess, brings some other form of value. So it's kind of different between fetishization of maybe like Asian women and also fetishization of a culture, but it's often rooted in some like power dynamics and based on stereotypes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's definitely you know, yeah, people who appreciate the culture. And then there's this link that we are trying to dig at. There's some sort of connection between a lot of these people who like the culture and also associate the liking the culture with liking the type of woman mm-hmm. in the culture. And we can see this, for example, with just in the past few decades and more commonly in the 21st century of this emerging, sex tourism market, specifically in Asia. So a lot of men who travel to other countries for the sole purpose of intercourse, sex, and this is massive in places like Thailand, the Philippines, Cambodia, Vietnam, and one of them also being Japan with a massive sex industry, and not even just for, sex, but for things like massage parlors, for example, or hostess clubs that are borderline sexualizing the woman to these travelers.
Yeah, and a lot of it is to, sell and make money, too. So when there is that aspect of sex tourism, it is, in a way, fueling the economy of these countries, but at what cost?
Mm.
And I guess it depends on where you stand with sex work and everything, but I think, it can be exploitative. And there has been at least a lot of historical instances of sex work being exploitative in terms of, we can get into it more actually later because we're going to get into historical power dynamics.
Yeah.
But in these certain situations where, there's the military men involved.
Mm-hmm. So more of these, we're just trying to give a broad overview of specifically the trend for, white men and Asian women. This relationship is the, for if we're looking at statistics, is in the U.S., just to preface, because they don't have as many Asian people compared to, Latino women, other races. And the having the, the marriage between a white man and an Asian female is the second most common U.S. interracial marriage, the highest being white man and Hispanic female, which is just also based off geography, and that they have more Hispanic women there. But within this statistic, the highest number was for this relationship was for Japanese women. So 63% of them were marrying white men in this. And there were other ones, too, that were pretty high. The higher other ones were, Korean women and the white guys. There was also Filipino women and white guys. But just going off the top, Japanese women were the highest. And this is also surprising because if you look the other way, which is, the having relationship between an Asian guy and a white woman, it is three times less likely to occur. So as of 2020 by Pew Research Center, they compared these two couples that being a white guy and an Asian female, there was almost there was around 900,000 couples versus Asian guy and white female, which was a little bit less than 300,000 couples. So
yeah.
That is saying something that's interesting because, in places where we are more diverse and we have equal exposure of either gender to each other, like, why wouldn't this just be equal? Like, why don't we just see, 500,000 couples of white guy, Asian female, 500,000 guys, 500 couples of Asian guys and white females. So something else is going on here, which we want to get into.
Yeah, it's definitely a representation of how cultural narratives are constructed around desire and attraction for different races and also based on gender. So yeah, there's some, there's some reasons that we have that may fuel into this.
Yeah. This is a hypothesis. So take this with a grain of salt, but there is some patterns of, white male preferences for, Asian or Japanese women. And one of them being if we have to go back and look into history and with power dynamics. And specifically with Japanese women, they were one of the most visible groups to be heavily sexualized and exoticized in history. So first of all, if we look into 1700s to 1800s in European colonial literature, at the very beginning, they were already portraying Asian women as seen as, you know, exotic and submissive and available to Western men. And it's also something to mention that usually white men were migrators, and they would migrate to other places and take over, and they were
colonizers.
Yeah, colonizers. That's the word.
Migrators.
I'm trying to be. I don't know why I couldn't think of the word.
No, so they being colonized. So kind to them.
So white men colonized to other places, and women were in these places. So that could be something that contributes. Another part I wanted to mention with specifically Japan and Japanese women is with this idea of exoticness of the women and their culture was that Japan started beginning to trade with the West around the mid-1800s. And they were trading things like, you know, kimonos, tea, and the Western travelers specifically first noticed, you know, I think Geisha, which is it's a woman who is a performing arts entertainer, and she wears a kimono kind of things. And so they were exposed to all these, you know, more exotic to their eyes ideas, and this could have also played a role.
Yeah, and that definitely ties into this concept of Orientalism, which is these typically Western interpretations of Eastern culture. So already Orientalism, even the word, is kind of like othering a lot of Eastern cultures and placing Western perspectives in the center. So it portrays, you know, like people from the East or Asian women and men as foreign, exotic, like a static kind of unchanging culture. And it does presume some level of Western superiority. And my thinking process is kind of like, well, maybe if you believe that, you know, whiteness is associated with superiority, that can be supported by surrounding yourself with people who you think are inferior in some ways. And already with the patriarchy, a lot of men do think that women are inferior, although necessary in a complementary role. And then taking that even further is like with Asian women, we can get into it more, but there are a lot of stereotypes surrounding how obedient and submissive that they are. So that could kind of just reinforce, you know, this Western ego or this idea that, you know, the West is superior and being white is superior as well.
Yeah. We'll get into that in a moment as well with that, since there are a lot of stereotypes. Obviously, stereotypes are not representative of a whole population, but they are there from reasons that we can't control individually. But moving on with the last portion of the history as well is that I think a lot of these ideas of these stereotypes also as well, and the first exposure to Asian women and specifically Japanese women in general for the Western world was after World War II, and also during the end, or I guess in World War II era, and with the military stationment of U.S. troops in Japan. So just looking at the entire piece of war, you know, Japan was seen as these, you know, very dangerous, aggressive country. You know, they were taking over places. And so the Japanese men were specifically, you know, stereotyped in the media as to be dangerous. They're aggressive and they're uncivilized. But meanwhile, on the other hand, the Japanese women were seen as potentially more that they were innocent victims and they had to be saved by the West, and that they were desirable and that they were exotic as well. And they just fit this image of traditional femininity, which were particularly, I think, don't know, adored. I don't want to say adored. Mm-hmm. But made the American troops who were stationed to Japan very interested in this kind of idea of this, I don't want to say fantasy, but like an Asian feminine fantasy is the word I put down. And this whole era also led to, you know, a lot of building relationships in Japan after World War II. And this didn't just also occur in Japan, but this is also including with American specifically, with the Vietnam War, for example, or Korean War, where they had these U.S. troops stationed in other Asian countries. So this led to more widespread, you know, sexualization and relationships with Asian women budding at this time.
Yeah, definitely. And just something to add is that I feel like during wartime, but I also in general, but I think it's especially prominent during wartime, is that there's this idea of like conquering another nation, and that often is included with like conquering women's bodies, I think, a lot of the time. Like, at least in the Vietnam War, there's so many stories of... Also, I'm going to start talking about some things that may be triggering, like sexual assault. So just so you know, during the Vietnam War, there's so many stories of rape and murder from these American soldiers who are fed this very violent narrative that they need to fulfill, and very little consequences for any war crimes that they do or any people that they kill or rape, basically. And they're... was a comfort woman system for American soldiers in Japan when DJ Coco mentioned that there's a lot of like military stationed there. And there's a lot of reports of women who are coerced into this prostitution. And all of this combined kind of just creates and perpetuates this idea that Asian women are obedient and submissive because of, I guess, a lot of the war experiences and colonial experiences, to be quite honest, of this domination of their bodies and of their selves as individuals. They're like objectified and reduced. And yeah, I think that is part of what may contribute to this mm-hmm. stereotype and sexualization.
So all this history now is bundled up into this stereotype, which is this Western media stereotype of, you know, the feminine, submissive, Eastern, like, Asian woman. And some of the traits that usually this we can see this in, you know, film, pornography, pop culture, advertising, and all these traits with Asian women that were associated with being, you know, gentle, they're quiet, they're submissive, you know, they're feminine, and they look young, like, they're family oriented also. And another one, they are exotic.
Yeah, that's a big one. I think I should have mentioned this a little bit earlier in the history section, but it's been quite a long time of artists, specifically European artists, who would incorporate a lot of, I guess, Asian styles and Japanese styles of art into their art. And, you know, that's, to a certain point, it is an appreciation, but it gets to be strange when, you know, the European artist, like, we're looking at another culture through their eyes, and women are kind of seen as these objects of art and beauty. And then when you're, I guess, I like displaying them in certain ways, that does tie into this fascination, this exoticism with Asian culture. And like, so many artists that I've read books about, at some point in their lives, they had like a phase where they're inspired by something Asian. And I think that goes for a lot of other parts, like in movies, etc. Like, just in our media, there has been this othering, but also this obsession with Asian culture.
Mm-hmm. I actually just recently, not recently, but somewhat recently, watched Lost in Translation.
Mm.
And this kind of reminded me of this idea where it's like, let's plunk these white people into Japan and incorporate them into the culture. Mm-hmm. And something feels a little off about it.
It is like such a debate though too, of like, why does it feel off? Are people being too sensitive nowadays? Or is it genuinely like a concern when we are like displaying people in certain ways?
Yeah. It's hard. It's difficult to figure out.
It's a hard line for sure.
And also another point to that too, I think a lot of the rise of Weijin, I don't want to say obsession, but of celebrities that are more worshipped, and these Weijin meetups that people are having of just meeting other Weijins. This is all kind of related. I was listening to Typically Tuesday with Leslie, and she was talking about Weijin people and this kind of reducing of Asian culture and whitewash. But that's a whole nother thing. But that also kind of reminded me of this acceptability of exoticness. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, you can't go too far, because then you're farthing away from white culture.
Yeah.
But you're just good. You're just exotic enough for us.
Yeah, and you'll never truly be seen as an equal either.
Yeah. Anyways, these are all kind of the stereotypes that are associated with Asian women. And even though they're stereotypes, and a lot of people don't just want to date someone just because it's like, no, people don't say, like, guys specifically don't be like, oh, I want to date her because she's submissive and she is family oriented.
Some might.
Some might directly say, which mm-hmm. we also have another section on yellow fever. But most people will not generally just outright say these things. But these cultural projections and these stereotypes will somewhat always be subconsciously in us and shape attraction. So
definitely.
One also other point I wanted to mention with how white men find Asian women appealing is with this film called Seeking Asian Female by the Chinese-American filmmaker Debbie Lum. And she interviewed non-Asian men who posted personal ads exclusively seeking Asian women. And they found what was appealing included having long black hair, emphasis on the long because that's associated with traditional femininity, having a quote-unquote mysterious appearance with dark eyes and almond eyelids and very subtly quietness to them. And she characterized this as an obsession with finding someone who is quote-unquote submissive, traditional, docile, the perfect wife who is not going to talk back.
Yikes.
Yeah.
And there is also the other side of, like, why that I'm curious about is, like, why Asian men or Asian women choose white men. And I feel like whiteness is very central in our world, and it is very pedestalized, because that is, like, the ultimate form of privilege, basically, when we're talking about mm-hmm. a lot of different aspects of living your life. Like, that is kind of a way to gain more privilege, is by, like, being with someone white, perhaps, although you don't necessarily, like, directly experience that, but just by being close, you might feel more protected in a way. Mm-hmm. Or yeah, I'm not totally sure, but I think there is something to say about why also Asian women are choosing white men specifically too. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Yeah, flipping the script, because mm-hmm. especially like going into other countries, you do hear reports of there's acceptability of white men versus someone who is another another race, another culture, from another culture. And that's that. Yeah, we didn't touch more into that, but that is definitely very linked into this other way for how people perceive each other. And if we go back into this trend of, you know, Asian man, white female relationships, that theirs is way lower on the other hand. So obviously there's something going on with both ends.
Yeah, like both of each partners are like choosing one another, and obviously there are power dynamics involved, like nobody can deny that.
Mm-hmm.
But there is, you know, choices most of the time being made by Asian women to have white men as partners too, which I just wanted to think about. And I know that Asian men are very in our culture, like, Asian men are kind of looked down upon in some ways, which might influence the psyche of, like, Asian women themselves too when they're choosing their partners.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of this is just speculation. Like, it's hard, you know, when studies don't necessarily directly look at this, but
yeah,
when there's systemic factors at play, at least.
Trying to condense all this into something more digestible. But I think before we go on, we should take a quick break and play a song. If
yeah, it's a good idea. Yeah. That's a nice idea. Yeah, let's take a little break.
We're going to take a break. So this next one is DJ Star Pick.
Yeah, it's called Just a One Scene by Uami from her EP composition Baby Exercise Book 5. She's good. I love this song.
Enjoy.
Atención.
Yuca Stereo. Yuca Stereo. Domingos 6 a 8 p.m. 6 a 8 p.m. 90.1 CJSF.
Chango.
90.1 FM. Yuca Stereo. Yuca Stereo.
Atención.
Are you interested in a more holistic approach to women's health? Lilac and Leaf is a virtual women's health clinic serving the Greater Vancouver region, bringing together mental health, nutrition, and well-being. Alongside our team of specialized counselors and dietitians, Lilac and Leaf offers access to discover community-made wellness products and opportunities to take educational workshops led by local health and wellness professionals. Learn more at lilacandleaf.ca.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back. Oops. No one heard that. This is CJSF 90.1 FM. Burnaby. Sorry, I am just faded out today. Anyways, you are tuning into Slumber Party. I'm DJ Coco.
And I'm DJ Star.
That last song you just heard was Lobster Telephone by Peggy Guo, South Korean DJ, producer. Love Peggy Guo.
She's good.
She's very good. I wish she would come to Vancouver at some point, but can only hope.
She actually did.
What?
Yeah, I think it was like 2 weeks ago or something.
There's no way.
Yeah.
Okay.
She did.
Well, that's terrible. I think I have Apple Music, and I don't get updates on when bands come. Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Oh, no, it was in May, so it was a while ago. Anyway,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe she'll come back.
Back to our topic. If you've been listening for the past hour, we've been chatting about specifically white men and obsession and just general Western obsession with Asian culture and Japanese women. And attraction to Asian women, Japanese, and specifically Japanese women. So we're just going to finish up that conversation around now. And starting off with, you know, sure, it's fine to like a culture and like everything about it, you know, like the woman in the culture. But there's a point where it gets harmful. And that's the part that we also wanted to stress on, which... it's called yellow fever. You've probably heard of it. And it sounds harmless, you know. And
it does not sound harmless. Yellow fever.
We're talking about the biological disease, but we're talking about, you know, this obsession. And definition-wise, it's attraction that is explicitly racialized and fetishized for Asian people, and this usually refers to, you know, East or Southeast Asian women.
Mm-hmm.
So these are typically white men, but men who only date and seek for Asian women, and it gets to a point where they're just basing it off stereotypes, and it can get to a point where they're exoticizing this person and thinking of them more like an object than an actual person. So to kind of preface more about that, if we go into the signs of someone with yellow fever, for example, so this
symptoms.
Yeah, it's like the symptoms of yellow fever. Is my mic? One sec. Okay. With the yellow fever, so if you hear, for example, someone's like, you know, I want a Japanese girlfriend because Japanese girls are more respectful and innocent.
Yeah, and I just want to highlight quickly that this obsession with innocence, especially when it's associated with Asian women, but I think some men value it in women, is that it's very infantilizing and borderline pedophilic. There's a certain amount of like purity culture involved mm-hmm. when people want an innocent woman and desire someone who is kind of untouched in many ways. I don't know why I phrased it like that.
Untouched. We're on radio.
Anyways. I think it's weird. I just want to say I think it's weird. And it's slightly rooted in some pedophilic beauty standards and expectations of women that are quite common.
Yeah. I think that with this innocence part as well, is that, yeah, Asian women are seen as more innocent, and I think it's associated with being modest and less promiscuous. But I don't think that someone, like, innocence should be a value for someone personally, because it's like, I think the idea of someone being innocent is desired because it means they won't be promiscuous. But I don't believe those are correlated. Like,
yeah,
just because someone's innocent doesn't mean they're instantly not going to cheat on you, for example.
Yeah, I think it's because they're easier to control as well if they're seen as innocent. There's like, you know, they don't know as much about what might be right or wrong as well. So that might be part of it.
Yeah. So essentially this person is, you know, exoticizing their culture and these stereotypes and projecting it onto a woman. And, you know, saying things like, I connect better with Asian girls because they're more family oriented, you know, and then comparing them to Western women, so saying that Western women are too independent for me.
Yeah.
And it's just like, that is not representative of every woman you meet in Japan.
No, it's just homogenizing and generalizing about an entire culture, taking away each person within that country or within that culture's identity and autonomy by being like, oh yeah, all Asian women are innocent and submissive. Like, that's what stereotypes do. That's why they're harmful as well.
Mm-hmm.
And like, we've talked about a lot about, you know, how this is fetishized, and but we haven't really talked that much about like what are actually some outcomes of that. And I just want to touch on that because I feel like it's really important, instead of just talking only abstractly but also applying it to the outcomes in real life. Asian women are like the most trafficked group worldwide, and also reducing Asian women to these kinds of like othering erotic objects basically that are submissive and compliant, I think we can all deduce what kind of consequences can be there when you only see a group of people as an object in some way, shape, or form through fetishization and just general objectification as well. And it also, I've seen or read experiences of Asian women being shamed for voicing their opinions or standing up for themselves because they do not fit in with the stereotype of Asian women being submissive or compliant. So they face like also this type of discrimination when they step outside the stereotype as well. And when they're within the stereotype, you know, obedient and submissive is not going to be the best for their own well-being a lot of the
time. Mm-hmm. Definitely. It takes all this, you know, harmless preferences, very deep preferences for women, into something that's, you know, not very good for Asian women, or society as a whole, to be doing these kind of things. And with that aside, we also, there's obviously a big scale of attraction for people, and that have someone with yellow fever is the very extreme end of being attracted to Asian women. But there's this whole gray area that is the question that I keep thinking of, is that a lot of, there's still, like, even right now, I just hear a lot of white men specifically who are genuinely attracted to Asian women, but they don't mention any of these stereotypes about them. And, you know, they're not saying that they're attracted to specific Asian features, but just saying that they feel more drawn to Asian women, but just have no explainable reason.
Yeah, I think it is in the collective subconscious to an extent of internalizing these stereotypes and attributes of Asian women that may or may not be true, but still leads them to pursue these types of people and relationships.
Yeah. And it can be sincere, like, definitely sincere. Like, a lot of people are just, they're not thinking about all these factors or anything. But it's when many, many, many thousands of guys are showing these similar patterns, there has to be some sort of broader social factors, which you've been trying to get at, that talk about this. So that one statistic still kills me, that there's three times more relationships for white men and Asian women than the other way around, than Asian men and white female. Obviously, there's other factors involved in this, but a threefold times
ratio,
yeah, of the relationship. There's something going on here.
Yeah, and we have outlined a lot of aspects as to why that may happen. Obviously, it's not a comprehensive list. We could have gone so much more into the history as well that I think has fueled this, with colonialism and with imperialism, but
I think we should just give a brief.
We have an hour, so we're doing the best we can. We also have like 5 minutes left.
Try to condense this.
Perhaps we should wrap it up a little bit. But yeah, final answer. It looks like it's too complicated to say one specific thing.
I think we can get... we'll just say that there's a lot of factors at play. There's things like we've talked about, you know, the social... the history behind maybe these influencing factors, Maybe some sort of ancestor was really into it. That's kind of a stretch. let me bring it back.
One analogy. Let's just throw it out there.
But I want to say, you know, cultural stereotypes, family upbringing, social environment, mm-hmm. you know, purely aesthetic preference.
White supremacy. Male dominance. Hey.
Explicit racial fetish. Like, yeah. All these things, we cannot explain every single person's attraction, but there is some sort of broader trend that we've been trying to claw at and that people have been trying to claw at. And
it's a combination of the things that we mentioned along with exoticism.
Oh, yeah.
And Orientalism and things like that.
Cultural stereotypes as well, like having Asian women, Japanese women specifically, perceived as more feminine, more sexualized in media, anime, specifically anime. Want to mention the anime. Asian women looking more youthful on average, which goes into all this whole realm of how men prefer younger looking women on average. This could be biological factors, cultural factors, but that's another thing as well.
Yeah, the objectification of women, seeing girlfriends as trophies and for the approval of other men. We have so many other things to say.
And
about
one
this.
More. Exoticism. Holy crap. Holy cow.
Kind of.
and just people who want, not that they're looking to, but some people maybe have some sort of superiority or complex that they like things that are different.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, instead of being a white man in a white female relationship, you could be a white man and some other race woman. some of these are stretches. These are just theories, but they can all contribute to this whole topic that we've been getting at.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's it for us today.
That's it. As usual, the answer is we don't know.
No. The answer is we know. We can't say that there's only one answer, though.
Yeah.
The answer is never black and white or just one specific thing. But I think there are some aspects that are stronger that play into it more, like colonialism. Anyway.
Yeah. I was having some fun reading about the history.
Yeah. I fell into way too many Reddit threads that were so problematic.
Yeah. Same.
Also researching this.
And Quora, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to also have to... I want to return to this conversation as well, because I should have mentioned at the beginning, but I am a product of this conversation, mm-hmm. because I am half... My dad is a white guy. My mom is Korean woman. And here I am. Mm-hmm. Why was this relationship happen? Why was my mom attracted to white guys? Why is she normally attracted to just white guys? I don't know. I'll have to talk to her about that.
Yeah, get back to listeners.
But that also was an influence, because she's mentioned that to me before, that she can tell when a certain type of white guy likes Asian woman, which mm-hmm. I will never experience, because I am not Asian, look Asian to others at first glance. So to hear that from an Asian woman is very interesting, and maybe something to touch upon later on.
Mm-hmm. Really great conversation.
Yes. So
talking about it.
That is pretty much it for today. Hopefully maybe you learned a little something. Mm-hmm. Maybe you can think about things, counter argument, whatever, all of the above. But thank you so much for tuning in today.
Yeah. Up next is Lynn's open mic. I think it's the final open mic for a while. So
yeah.
Definitely stay tuned for that. And then Connor's show, Bitcoover, at 8 p.m.
So, yeah. Two awesome shows. What should we do next week? Continuation?
Brainstorming on air. I don't know. It's my turn to choose a topic next week.
Yeah,
so.
It's been your turn. It has been your turn.
Okay.
I'm kidding.
Me in front of all of our listeners.
I'm kidding. I'm
it
just
has been my
filling
turn.
Up like 20 seconds until our outro.
By blaming me.
But
wow.
Yeah, thank you again for all listening. We don't really have a final song. We're just going to say our goodbyes. But yeah, we will see you next week.
Next week, 6 to 7 p.m. We'll be here. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. See you guys next week, Tuesdays at 6 p.m.